Of course, Daphne said. Let's go inside and make lunch. Margarita is off this weekend, so we're the cooks. They worked together in the kitchen, but when they finished loading the tortillas with refried beans, veggies, and cheese, they didn't end up with neat and beautiful burritos like Margarita's. They look pretty sad, don't they? Daphne said with a laugh. What the heck? They'll taste good anyway. Amber washed her hands and tore off a section of paper toweling while Daphne reached into a cabinet and pulled out two trays. Here we go. I think everything will fit. We'll eat outside by the pool.
Ooh, yummy!
Bella called as they carried the food out. They sat, the five of them, under the large umbrella, the reflection of the sun on the turquoise pool water making shimmery diamonds and triangles. A slight breeze sliced through the warmth, a perfect late spring day. Amber closed her eyes a moment, pretending this all belonged to her. If anything, the last few weeks had shown her that Daphne now considered Amber her closest friend and confidant. Last night, after the girls had gone to bed, she and Daphne had sat at the kitchen table and talked late into the night. Daphne had told her all about her childhood, how much her parents had tried to make their lives seem completely normal, despite the illness that crouched in the background, ready to pounce without warning at any moment. Mom and Dad encouraged Julie to do everything healthy kids can. They gave her the freedom to live her life the way she wanted, to try all the things she wanted to, Daphne had said. At first, when Daphne talked about all the hospital stays, the hacking coughs that brought up gloppy mucus, the runny bowels and trouble digesting food, Amber had begun to feel sympathy. But when she compared her own childhood to Daphne's, and even Julie's, her resentment returned. At least Julie had grown up in a nice house with money and parents who cared about her. Okay, she was sick and then she died. So what? A lot of people were sick. A lot of people died. Was that a reason to make them saints? How about Amber and what she'd gone through? Didn't she deserve a little sympathy, too? She looked around the table at all of them. Bella, lazing back in her chair and swinging her legs back and forth, taking distracted bites out of her burrito without a care in the world, the pampered and indulged child of wealth. Tallulah, sitting up straight and concentrating on the lunch before her. Daphne, sun-kissed and casually beautiful, making sure her brood had refills and napkins and anything else they needed. And Jackson, the master of it all, sitting like a knighted lord watching over his vast domain and faultless family. Suddenly the terrible emptiness inside Amber was a physical gnawing, as if the very life were being squeezed from her. This was no time to go soft. She would win this time. 23. Things were so busy at work that Amber hadn't seen Daphne in 2 weeks, since their kayaking day. But Jackson was out of town again, so she'd called Daphne to see if she'd like to see a movie, and Daphne had invited her to the house instead. She had started fantasizing about the day the house would belong to her. She wanted to leave her mark on it everywhere. On one occasion, when Daphne left her at the house alone to go pick up the girls, she'd tried on every pair of Daphne's underwear. Sometimes she'd go upstairs and use Daphne's bathroom, brush her hair with Daphne's brush, apply a little of her lipstick. They almost looked the same, she would think as she looked in the mirror at herself. She arrived right at 7. Bella opened the door a crack and peeked out.
What are you doing here?
Hi, sweetie. Mommy invited me over.
Bella rolled her eyes.
We're watching The Wizard of Oz tonight. Don't try and change it to some boring adult movie.
She opened the door, then turned her back on Amber. Now Amber rolled her eyes. The Wizard of Oz. If she had to listen to Dorothy keep saying, "There's no place like home," she might kill herself.
"There you are. Bella said you were here. Come on in the kitchen."
Daphne appeared, looking perfect in a romper that looked very much like a Stella McCartney Amber had seen in a recent Vogue. Amber sat down at the enormous marble island.
"Can I get you a drink?"
"Sure, whatever you're having."
Daphne poured her a glass of Chardonnay from the open bottle.
"Cheers."
Daphne raised her glass. Amber took a small sip.
"I understand we've got the Wizard of Oz on tap for tonight."
Daphne gave her an apologetic look.
"Yes, sorry. I forgot I'd promised the girls."
She lowered her voice so Bella wouldn't hear.
"Once we're a half an hour in, we can sneak into the other room and chat. They won't notice."
Whatever, Amber thought. The doorbell rang.
"Is someone else coming?"
Amber asked. Daphne shook her head.
"I'm not expecting anyone. Be right back."
A minute later, Amber heard voices, and then Meredith was there, following Daphne back into the kitchen. She looked determined.
"Hi, Meredith,"
Amber greeted her, feeling uneasy. Daphne had a look of concern on her face and put a hand on Amber's arm.
"Meredith says she needs to talk to us in private."
Amber's thoughts raced. Could she have discovered the truth? Maybe the photo from the fundraiser had been her undoing after all. She took a deep breath to stop the hammering in her chest. No need to get upset until she heard what Meredith had to say. She rose from her stool.
"Margarita, could you please feed the girls now? We'll be back in a little while."
Daphne turned to Amber and Meredith.
"Let's go into the study."
Amber's heart was still pounding as she followed them down the hallway and into the wood-paneled study. She stared straight ahead at the wall of books, willing herself to be calm.
"Let's all have a seat."
Daphne pulled out a chair and sat at the mahogany card table in the corner of the room. Amber and Meredith followed suit. Meredith looked at Amber as she spoke.
"As you know, I run all our committee applications through a background check."
"Didn't you do that months ago?" Daphne interrupted. Meredith put a hand up.
"Yes, I thought I had. Apparently the agency misfiled Amber's. They ran it last week and called me today."
"And?" Daphne prodded.
"And when they ran the social, they discovered that Amber Patterson has been missing for 4 years.
She held up a copy of a missing person flyer, with a photo of a young woman with dark hair and a round face, who looked nothing like Amber.
"What? That must be some sort of mistake," Daphne said.
Amber kept quiet, but her heartbeat slowed. So that was all. She could work with this. Meredith sat up straighter.
"No mistake. I called the Eustis, Nebraska Records Department. Same social security number."
She pulled out a photocopy of an article from the Clipper Herald with the headline, "Amber Patterson Still Missing," and handed it to Daphne.
"Want to tell us about it, Amber, or whatever your name is?"
Amber put her hands up to her face and cried real tears of panic.
"It's not what you think."
She choked back a sob.
"What is it, then?"
Meredith's tone was steely. Amber sniffled and wiped her nose.
"I can explain, but not to her."
She spat out the last word.
"Give it up, girl."
Meredith's voice rose.
"Who are you, and what do you want?"
"Meredith, please, this isn't helping," Daphne said.
"Amber, calm down. I'm sure there's a good explanation. Tell me what this is all about."
Amber sank back into the chair, hoping she looked as distraught as she felt.
"I know it looks bad, and I didn't want to have to tell anyone, but I had to get away.
Away from what? Meredith insisted, and Amber shrank back more.
Meredith, please let me ask the questions, Daphne said, and put her hand gently on Amber's knee.
What were you running away from, sweetie?
Amber closed her eyes and sighed.
My father.
Daphne looked like she'd been struck.
Your father? Did he hurt you?
Amber hung her head as she spoke.
I'm so ashamed to tell you this. He raped me.
Daphne gasped.
I've never told another soul.
Oh my God, Daphne said. I'm so sorry.
It went on for years, from the time I was 10. He left Charlene alone as long as I was around and didn't tell. That's why I had to stay. I couldn't let him hurt her.
That's horrible. Couldn't you tell your mother? She sniffled.
I tried, but she didn't believe me, said I was just trying to get attention, and she'd whip my butt if I ever told anyone else such a vile lie.
A quick glance out of the corner of her eye assured her that Daphne believed her, but Meredith looked unconvinced.
So what happened exactly?
Meredith's voice sounded almost mocking, and Amber saw Daphne give her a look.
I stayed until Charlene died. He told me if I left, he'd hunt me down and kill me. So I had to change my name. I hitchhiked to Nebraska and met a guy in a bar. He found me a roommate. I worked waitressing and saved my money until I had enough to come here and start over. He worked at the Hall of Records and got me the information on the missing girl, introduced me to someone who made me an ID in Amber's name.
Amber waited a beat for the women to respond. To her great relief, Daphne rose and took her in her arms.
I'm so sorry, she said again.
Meredith wasn't letting it go, though.
What? Daphne, do you mean to tell me you're just going to take her word for it and not investigate? I can't believe this.
Daphne's eyes were cold.
Please go, Meredith. I'll call you later.
You have a blind spot where she's concerned.
Meredith walked to the door in a huff and turned around before she left.
Mark my words, Daphne. This will not end well.
Daphne took Amber's hand.
Don't you worry. No one will ever hurt you again.
What about Meredith? What if she tells people?
You let me worry about Meredith. I'll make sure she doesn't breathe a word.
Please don't tell anyone, Daphne. I have to keep pretending I'm Amber. You don't know how he is. He'll find me wherever I am.
Daphne nodded.
I won't tell another soul, not even Jackson.
Amber felt a little guilty for painting her father in such a bad light. After all, he'd worked nonstop at the cleaners to support her mother and her three sisters, and he would never have touched any of his daughters. Of course, he'd also made all of them work at that damn store for free, which she was pretty sure was child slave labor, close enough to child abuse. So what if he never touched her? He still took advantage of her. Suddenly, she didn't feel so guilty anymore. She raised her head from Daphne's shoulder and looked her in the eye.
I don't know what I did to deserve a friend like you. Thank you for always being there for me.
Daphne smiled and smoothed Amber's hair.
You'd do the same for me.
Amber gave her a forlorn smile and nodded. Daphne started to walk from the room, then turned back.
I'll tell Bella that the Wizard of Oz will have to wait. I think you deserve to pick tonight.
Amber smiled a genuine smile. She couldn't wait to see the look of disappointment on the little princess's face.
That would really help me get my mind off things.
24. Growing up, Amber had always hated the 4th of July. The only good thing about that day was that her father closed the dry cleaners.
She and her three sisters would watch the parade, the high school marching band that was always screechingly off-key, at least one majorette who would drop her batons, and some plump-faced farm girl who would wave with glee from a hay-filled wagon. It was all so hokey and embarrassing. Amber cringed every time. But this year was different. Quite different. Amber sat with Daphne on the back deck of the parish's 65-foot Hatteras as it sped across the Sound. They were spending the entire weekend on the boat, and Amber was over the moon. She'd gone shopping with Daphne and spent more than she had planned, but she wanted to look her absolute best every moment since she'd be near Jackson 24/7. She bought a new white bikini and then splurged on a one-piece black suit with a long, low V in the front and cutouts on the sides. It was one of the sexiest suits she'd ever seen, and Daphne had nodded her approval when Amber walked out from the dressing room. Her cover-up was sheer, so her body would never be hidden from him. For when they went ashore, she'd gotten white shorts that barely covered her buttocks and tank tops that clung just a bit. She'd brought skinny white pants for evening, a few t-shirts, and a casual navy sweater to throw over her shoulders. She'd even gotten a spray tan. This was her time to shine. Jackson stood at the controls, his legs tanned and muscular, in a pair of khaki shorts and white golf shirt. He moved with utter confidence and mastery. He turned to where Daphne and Amber sat and called to them over the noise.
"Hey, sweetheart, can you get me a beer?"
Daphne reached into the cooler and brought out a can of Gordon Ale, dripping with cold water. She had to admit, Daphne's black bikini showed off her perfect body to its best advantage. She had hoped Daphne would be wearing something more matronly, but no such luck. Daphne handed it to Amber.
"Here, why don't you give it to him? You can get a lesson on how to handle a boat."
Amber took the can from Daphne and jumped up.
"Sure."
"Hey."
She tapped Jackson on the shoulder. "Here's your beer."
"Thanks."
He opened it, took a sip, and Amber noticed his long fingers and fine hands, immediately imagining them on her body.
"Daphne said you'd give me a boat driving lesson," she said coyly.
"Boat driving? Is that what she called it?"
He laughed. "Well, maybe not. I can't remember."
"Here," he said, moving slightly to the right. "Take the wheel."
"What? No! What if we crash?"
"You're cute. What are we going to crash into? You really don't have to move it much. Just point the end of the bow in the direction you want to go, and don't make any sudden jerking moves."
She put her hands on the wheel and concentrated on the water, her nerves subsiding a bit as she got the feel of it.
"Good," he said. "Steady as you go."
"This is fun," she said, throwing her head back and laughing. "I could do this all day."
Jackson patted her on the back.
"Great. It's good to have a partner up here. Daphne isn't crazy about the boat. Prefers the kayak."
Amber widened her eyes.
"Really? I can't imagine that. This is way better than kayaking."
"Maybe you can convince my wife of that."
He took another sip of ale and looked back to where Daphne sat, quietly reading The Portrait of a Lady. Amber followed his gaze and put a reassuring hand on his arm.
"I'm sure she likes it more than you think. I know I would."
She stayed at the wheel for the next hour, asking questions and praising Jackson for his depth of navigation knowledge. She made him promise to show her the charts later, so she could study them and learn about the waters around Connecticut. And every now and then, she'd move close enough that her body would barely touch his. When she thought it might be too obvious, she turned the wheel back over to Jackson and went back to sit with Daphne. They were approaching Mystic, and the sun was beginning to set. Daphne looked up from her book.
Well, you seem to be enjoying yourself. Did you learn a lot?
Amber searched Daphne's face for any sign of annoyance, but she seemed genuinely delighted that Amber was having a good time.
I liked it, she said. Jackson knows so much.
This boat is his favorite thing. He'd be on it every weekend if I let him.
You don't love it, do you?
I like it. I just don't like spending all my time on it. We have a beautiful home, the beach, and a pool. I like being there. On the boat, there's just endless water, and it takes so much time to get anywhere. I start to get bored, and the girls begin to get antsy, too. It's a small space, and it's hard to keep everything in order. Amber wondered again at Daphne's obsession with neatness. Did she ever lighten up and relax?
Well, you have to admit it's pretty exciting. The wind rushing through your hair and ripping through the water, Amber said.
I especially don't enjoy speeding. To tell you the truth, I prefer sailing. It's quiet. I feel much more connected to nature when I'm on a sailboat.
Does Jackson like it? Amber asked.
Not much. Don't get me wrong, he's a good sailor, knows his stuff. But he can fly at top speed on this, and he likes fishing, too. She pushed her hair back from her face. My boyfriend in college grew up sailing, so we spent a lot of time on his family's sailboat. That's where I learned.
I guess I can understand why you'd like that better, Amber said.
It's fine, really. I make sure to bring a good book, and the girls bring games. And of course, it's always fun to have a friend like you aboard.
Thanks for asking me, Daph. It's a real treat for me.
You're welcome, Daphne said, yawning and rising from her chair.
I'm going below to check on the girls. You don't mind if I lie down for a few minutes before dinner, do you?
Of course not. Go ahead and rest.
Amber watched her go down the stairs and immediately took up her position next to Jackson again.
Daphne's taking a nap. I think she was getting bored.
She watched his face for a reaction, but if he had any irritation, he certainly didn't show it.
She's a good sport about it.
She is. She was telling me about all the fun she had in college when she and her old boyfriend would go sailing together.
Amber noticed a slight twitch in Jackson's cheek.
I don't know. That seems so tame compared to this.
Why don't you have another go? I'll grab us a couple of drinks.
She gripped the wheel and felt like she might finally, slowly, be taking control of the helm. Later that night, after a leisurely dinner in Mystic, the five of them walked back to the marina under a warm, star-studded sky.
Daddy, Tallulah said as they ambled, are we going to anchor out and watch the fireworks tomorrow night?
Absolutely, just like we always do.
Goody, Bella said. I want to sit way up on the flybridge all by myself. I'm old enough now.
Not so fast, little one.
Jackson took one of her hands and Daphne grabbed the other, and they swung her between them.
You can't go alone yet.
I want to lie down on the forward deck like I did last year, and watch from there,
Tallulah piped up.
Daddy will sit on the bridge with you, Bella, and I'll be on the deck with Tallulah.
She turned to Amber.
And you should go up with Jackson and Bella. It's a great place to watch from, especially since this is your first time.
That's fine with me, Amber thought. It was a little past 10 when they got back to the boat, and once again, Amber found herself alone with Jackson as Daphne took the children below to get them ready for bed. He had gotten some wine from the galley and was back with 3 glasses in one hand and the bottle of muscat in the other.
Too early to finish the night. What do you say we have a glass before turning in?
Sounds great, Amber said. They sat in the warm night air,
sipping wine and chatting about Parrish International's latest acquisition and how the financing would work. When Daphne appeared, Jackson poured another glass and handed it to her.
Here, sweetheart.
No, thank you, darling. I'm feeling rather sleepy. Probably shouldn't have had such a big meal. I think I'll hit the sack. Actually, Amber thought, Daphne really did look tired. But big meal? She'd hardly touched her food. Well, good night, you two. She smiled at Jackson. I'll keep the nightlight on for you.
I'll be down soon. You get some rest.
After she disappeared, Amber poured herself another glass of wine. I remember how tired my mother used to get, and how she stopped staying up late. My father would joke and say things had really changed from their hot dating days. Jackson looked into his glass as he twirled the stem.
Are your parents alive?
Yes, they're back in Nebraska. Daphne reminds me a lot of my mom. A faint hint of surprise registered on his face and was quickly replaced by his usual inscrutability. Amber was beginning to realize that he was particularly skilled at keeping his thoughts and feelings hidden.
How are they alike?
Well, they're both homebodies. My mom liked nothing better than watching a sentimental movie with us kids. A lot of times, when you're away, Daph invites me over for movie night with Tallulah and Bella. It's fun. Reminds me of home. And I think she gets sort of tired of all these charity events and art openings and all those things. At least, that's what she tells me.
That's interesting, Jackson said. What else?
Well, she likes quiet things, my mom. Like Daphne. My mom would have hated how fast this boat goes, and all the wind in her face. Not that we had boats, but my dad did have a motorcycle. She hated it. The noise and the speed. She preferred her bicycle. Slow and quiet. More crap, but she was making her point. He was quiet. I thought it was thrilling, being at the helm and speeding across the water. But maybe tomorrow we should take it a little slower, so that Daphne enjoys it too.
Yes, good idea, he said idly, and finished the wine in his glass.
Things were humming along now, and she hoped that tomorrow night there would be more fireworks than the ones in the sky. 25. Right after the 4th of July, Amber finally secured the coveted position of Jackson's first assistant. The resumes had dwindled, and anything that looked too good, Amber had tossed. She had made herself indispensable to Jackson since Mrs. Batley's departure, so when he called her into his office, she felt sure it was to tell her she was officially his new assistant. She took a pad and pen with her and sat in a leather armchair across from his desk, careful to cross her black-stockinged legs to their best advantage. She looked at him through thick lashes she had gotten plumped at the esthetician's and slightly parted glossy lips. She knew her teeth, recently whitened at the dentist's, looked perfect against her lips. Jackson stared at her a moment and then began.
I think you know how helpful you've been these last months. I've decided to suspend the search for a new assistant, and am offering the position to you if you're interested. She wanted to jump up and shout, but didn't betray her glee.
I'm overwhelmed. I'm definitely interested. Thank you.
Good. I'll talk to Human Resources.
He looked down at a document in front of him, clearly dismissing her, and Amber rose.
Oh, he said, and she stopped and turned around. Of course, there will be a substantial raise.
To get close to him, she would have worked there for nothing. But in truth, she had been working damn hard, and felt she deserved her now six-figure salary. It didn't take long for her to anticipate his needs in her new role, and in a very short time, they were working together with the precision of a fine Swiss watch. Amber loved the importance the job gave her, her proximity to the big boss. The admins looked at her with envy, and the executives treated her with respect. No one wanted to be on the wrong side of the person who had the ear of Jackson Parrish. It was a heady experience. She thought of that Lockwood son of a bitch back home and how he'd treated her, as if she were some piece of trash he could throw away. She jumped when her buzzer sounded late Friday and got up and went to his office. When she approached his desk, she saw what looked like a stack of bills and a large checkbook.
"I'm sorry to burden you with this. Batley used to take care of it, and I just don't have time to look this all over."
"Did you really just use that word with me? You should know by now that nothing you give me to do is a burden." Jackson smiled at her.
"Touché. You do it all with pleasure. I should put PA after your name on your business cards. Perfect assistant."
Perfect boss. I guess we're a team made in heaven."
"Here's the test," he said, with a wry smile.
"What is it?" she asked.
"Bills. They're all on autopay, but I want you to go over them, match them to the receipts, and be sure they're accurate. And of course, there are some bills that need to be paid by check. I've indicated which those are, so you'll write a monthly check for those. Sabine and Surrey, school expenses, those kinds of things."
"Of course, no problem." She picked up the pile and the checkbook, but hesitated before leaving his office. "You know, I'm feeling like Telemachus." Jackson's eyebrows went up in surprise.
"What?"
"You know, from the Odyssey."
"I know who Telemachus is. You've read the Odyssey?"
Amber nodded. "A few times. I love it. I love the way he takes on more and more responsibility. So, don't ever feel like you're giving me too much." The way he looked at her felt to Amber as if he was appraising her, and it seemed to her that she had definitely scored a lot of points. She smiled sweetly and left him still studying her as she walked out the door. She dropped everything onto her desk and began going through the folders. It turned out to be a very interesting exercise. Amber was astounded at the enormous sums of money Daphne spent each month. There were charges at Barney's, Bergdorf Goodman, Neiman Marcus, Henry Bendel, and independent boutiques, not to mention the couture houses and jewelers. In one month alone, she'd bought over $200,000 worth of merchandise. Then came the nanny salaries, and the housekeeper and the driver, Daphne's gym membership and private yoga and Pilates classes, the girls' riding and tennis lessons, the country club dues, the yacht club fees, the shows and dinners, the trips. It went on and on, like a freaking fairy tale. Amber's new salary was a pittance compared to the money Daphne could access. One bill in particular stopped her in her tracks. It was for a red crocodile Hermes Birkin. She did a double take when she saw the price. $69,000. For a purse. That was more than half her annual salary. And Daphne would probably use it a couple of times, then throw it in her closet. Amber's outrage was so palpable she thought she would choke. It was obscene. If Daphne really wanted to help families living with CF, why didn't she donate more of her own money to them and be satisfied with the dozen designer purses she already had? What a little hypocrite. At least Amber was honest with herself about her motives. When she was married to Jackson, she wouldn't waste her time pretending to care about charity work. Daphne didn't have to lift a finger at home, could buy anything she wanted, and had a husband who loved her, and she couldn't even pay her own bills? How spoiled could you get? Amber would never be lazy enough to give someone else an inside view into her lifestyle. Now that she had seen even more deeply into the pampered life Daphne led, she realized how limitless Jackson's wealth was and became even more determined to carry out her plan. It took her over an hour and a half to wade through all the bills and receipts, and by the time she was finished, she was positively steaming. She got up from her desk and went to the coffee bar down the hall. On the way back, she stopped in the ladies' room and looked at herself in the mirror. She liked what she saw, but it was time to up the ante, make herself just a bit sexier, but in a subtle way, have him wonder what was different about her. When she got back to her desk, she saw that Jackson had already left for the day. She put the bills and checkbook in her drawer, locked it, and drank her coffee. When she finally closed her office door and walked out of the building, plans were forming in her mind. She had the whole weekend to perfect them. 26. On Saturday, she met Daphne at Barnes & Noble, and then they went to lunch at the small cafe across the street. They sat at a small booth near the back of the restaurant, and Amber ordered a green salad with chicken. She was surprised when Daphne ordered a cheeseburger and fries, but said nothing. "So, Jackson tells me you're doing an amazing job. Do you like it?" "I do. It is a lot of work, but I really love it. I can't thank you enough for recommending me." "I'm so glad. I knew you'd be great." Amber looked at the package on the seat next to Daphne, which she'd been carrying all morning. "What's in the bag, Daph?" "Oh, that. It's a bottle of perfume I have to return. It's the one I used to wear when Jackson and I met, and he loved it. I haven't worn it in a long time, so I decided to try it again. But I must be allergic now. Broke out in hives."
"That's terrible. What's it called?"
"Incomparable. Ha. That's how I felt when I wore it." Their food arrived, and Daphne dug into the cheeseburger as if she hadn't eaten in days. "Mmm, delicious," she said.
"What was it like, you know, when you and Jackson were dating?"
"I was so young and inexperienced, but in some crazy way, I think that appealed to him. He'd been with so many glamour girls who knew their way around. I think he liked that he could take me to places I'd never been and show me things I'd never seen." She paused and had a faraway look in her eyes. "I hung on his every word." She looked back at Amber. "He likes to be adored, you know." She laughed. "And it's pretty easy to adore him. He's one of a kind."
"Yes, he is," Amber agreed. "Anyway, I guess nothing stays the same. Of course, now things are different."
"What do you mean?"
"Oh, you know, children come along, things become routine. Lovemaking isn't as passionate. Sometimes you're just too tired, and sometimes you just don't feel like it."
"Must be especially hard when you have a new baby. It must be so exhausting. You read all the time about new moms having postpartum depression." Daphne was quiet and looked down for a moment. With her eyes still fixed on the floor, she said,
"I'm sure it's a terrible thing."
After a few awkward minutes, Amber tried again.
"Well, anyway, having children didn't seem to put the damper on your romance. Every time I'm with you guys, it's obvious that he's crazy about you."
Daphne smiled.
"We've been through a lot together. I hope I have such a great marriage one day, like you and Jackson, the perfect couple."
Daphne took a sip of her coffee and looked at Amber a long moment.
"Marriage is hard work. If you love someone, you don't let anything destroy it."
This is getting interesting, Amber thought.
"Like what?"
"There was a bump in the road.
right after Bella was born. She paused again, tilting her head. There was an indiscretion.
He cheated on you?
Daphne nodded. It was just once. I was exhausted, busy with the baby. We hadn't made love in months. She shrugged. Men have their needs. Plus, it took me a long time to get back in shape.
Was Daphne seriously justifying what he did? She was even more gullible than Amber thought.
I'm not saying what he did was right, but he was sorry after, and swore it would never happen again. She gave Amber what looked like a forced smile. And he never has.
Wow, that must have been so hard for you. But at least you bounced back. The two of you seem very happy, Amber said.
She looked at her watch.
Well, she said, I guess we should be going. I have a salon appointment to get to.
After their lunch, Amber went home and ordered a bottle of Incomparable online. She looked up from the computer and smiled to herself, relishing her new piece of intel. He'd cheated before. If he could do it once, he could surely do it again. Monday brought with it drowning rain and cold winds, which soaked Amber as she waited for the train. The only thing Amber disliked about her job was the long commute into the city. It was fine to come in for a leisurely day of checking out museums, but rush hour travel was its own special torture. As she sat, still windblown and wet, wedged between a large man who smelled of cigars and a young boy with a dirty backpack, she read the advertisements above the windows across from her. She could practically recite them by heart now. She wondered what it was like to see your pictures on the walls of trains or the side of buses. Did the models get a kick out of it? She fantasized about being the object of desire for thousands of men. Her body was certainly good enough, and with the right hair and makeup, she bet she'd look every bit as good as those stuck-up models, even though she was just 5'7", a few inches shorter than Daphne. They probably thought they were so special, sticking their fingers down their throats just to stay skinny. She would never do that. But then again, she was lucky to be naturally thin. By the time she arrived at 57th Street, the hems of her pants were almost dry. The rain had stopped, but the wind was still whipping furiously. She nodded at the doorman and said good morning to the guard at the front desk.
Good morning, Miss Patterson. Filthy weather out there. You still managed to look perfect, though. New hairstyle?
She loved that they all knew who she was.
Yes, thanks.
She swiped her ID badge and walked to the elevator. Her first stop when she got upstairs was the ladies' room. She pulled out her cordless flat iron and smoothed her hair, now shoulder length and light champagne blonde. After she dabbed a drop of Incomparable on her wrists, the tennis shoes came off, and on went the new Louboutins. She wore a black turtleneck sweater dress and a black lace push-up bra that beautifully enhanced her ample assets. On her wrist was a wide silver cuff bracelet. The only other jewelry were her earrings, hammered silver and stylishly simple. She smiled in the mirror, confident that she looked like she had just completed a Ralph Lauren photo shoot. When she entered her office, she saw that Jackson's door was closed and the windows still dark. She made it her business to be there early every day, but Jackson still managed to beat her. Today was a rare exception. She started answering emails, and the next time she looked up, it was 8:30. Jackson sauntered in after 10.
Good morning, Jackson. Everything okay?
Morning. Yeah, fine. Had a conference at Bella's school.
He unlocked his office door and then stopped.
By the way, we have a show tonight. Would you make a 6 o'clock dinner reservation for two at Gabriel's?
Certainly.
He started to go inside, but stopped again.
You look very nice today.
Amber felt the heat rise on her neck.
Thank you. That's very kind of you.
Nothing kind about it. Just the truth.
He walked into his office and closed the door. The thought of Daphne and Jackson having a romantic dinner and then sitting side by side in a Broadway theater pissed her off. She wanted to be the one sitting next to him in those primo seats, everyone looking at her with envy. But she knew that she had to keep her head about her. It wouldn't serve her to lose her cool and do something stupid. Later that afternoon, she and Jackson were going over his itinerary for next week's trip to China, when Daphne called his cell. Amber heard only his side of the conversation, but it was apparent he wasn't pleased. He clicked off and threw the phone onto the desk.
Shit. Totally screws up the plans for tonight.
Is Daphne all right?
He closed his eyes and rubbed the bridge of his nose.
She's fine, so to speak. Says Bella's not well. Doesn't want to come in for the play.
I'm sorry, Amber said. Shall I cancel the reservation?
Jackson thought about this a few seconds, and then gave Amber an appraising look.
Any chance you'd be interested in dinner and a show?
Amber felt her stomach drop. This was too easy, falling into her lap like a gift from the heavens.
I'd love to. I've never been to a Broadway show.
She hadn't forgotten that he liked Innocence and first-timers.
Good. These tickets for Hamlet are a hot item, limited run, and I don't want to miss it. Let's finish up by 5:30 or so, and we'll grab a cab to the restaurant. Reservations at 6?
Yes.
Good. Let's get back to work.
Amber went back to her desk and phoned Daphne, who answered after one ring.
Daphne, it's Amber. Jackson told me Bella's not well. I hope it's nothing serious.
No, I don't think so. Just some sniffles and a low-grade fever. You know, she just wants Mommy. I didn't want to leave her.
Yes, I can understand why you wouldn't want to.
She paused.
Jackson asked me to fill in for you tonight. I just wanted to let you know. You don't mind, do you?
Of course I don't mind. I think it's a great idea. Enjoy yourself.
Okay. Thanks, Daphne. I hope Bella's feeling better soon.
For once, Amber was filled with gratitude for the little nuisance. They left the office at 5:30 on the dot. She felt a rush sitting next to him in the taxi. It was better than the best high she'd ever experienced. When they walked into the restaurant, she was pleased by the admiring glances of those around her. Amber knew she looked good, and the man with his hand on her back was one of the richest men in the room. They were seated at a table in a quiet corner of the posh restaurant, bathed in candlelight.
Wow, I've never been in a restaurant like this.
This was one of the first places I brought Daphne when we started dating.
Daphne was the last thing Amber wanted to talk about, but if he insisted, maybe she could spin it to her advantage.
Daphne's talked a lot about your dating days, how different it was then.
He sat back in his chair and smiled.
Different? Yes, it was different then. There's nothing like the rush that comes with falling in love. And I fell hard, that's for sure. I'd never met anyone like her.
He took a sip of wine, and once again, Amber admired his fine hands.
Sounds like you were made for each other.
She practically had to choke the words out. He put the glass down and nodded.
Daphne has grown into such an amazing woman over the years. I look at all she's accomplished and am so proud of her. I have the perfect wife.
Amber almost gagged on her salad. Just when she thought he might be noticing the changes in her,
the new, stylish, and attractive Amber. He was going on about his golden wife. They talked mostly about business after that, and he treated her as any colleague he might have been dining with. When they got to the theater and took their seats, in a box, she let herself imagine again what it would be like to be married to him. If only he were interested in her as a woman, and not just an assistant, the night would have been perfect. When the curtain fell at 11, Amber was not ready to end the evening. There were still plenty of bustling crowds on the street, and it looked as if all the restaurants and cafes were filled with patrons. As they strolled toward Times Square, Jackson looked at his watch.
"It's getting late, and we have an early day tomorrow. The meeting with Whitcomb Properties."
"I'm wide awake, not tired at all," she said.
"You might feel different when you're alarm."
He stopped mid-sentence.
"You're going to be exhausted in the morning. Daphne and I were going to stay at the apartment tonight, and when she couldn't make it, I told her I was going to go ahead and stay by myself. You could stay in the guest room. It seems foolish for you to take a train at this late hour, and you've stayed with us in the city before. I suppose the only problem is clothing."
"I'm sure Daphne wouldn't mind if I borrow something. After all, she lent me a designer gown for the fundraiser. I'm only one size smaller than she is."
Amber hoped he didn't miss the comparison.
"Okay, then."
Jackson hailed a cab, and Amber sank back into the seat, happy with this turn of events. The taxi let them off in front of an uptown building, and they walked under the long canopy to the entrance.
"Good evening, Mr. Parrish."
The doorman's face showed no reaction to Amber, whether because of discretion or lack of interest, she didn't know. The private elevator opened directly into the foyer of the large space. It was unlike their house, a more modern and minimalist design, all in shades of white and gray. The focal points were the paintings on the walls, abstract art with bursts of color that fused it all together. She took it all in, overwhelmed.
"I'm going to grab a nightcap," Jackson said. "The guest bedroom is the third door on the right. Fresh towels and toothbrushes, everything you might need. But before that, why don't you take a look in Daphne's closet and pick something out for the morning?"
He went to the glass cart that held bottles and decanters and poured himself a scotch.
"Okay, I won't be long."
She walked into the sumptuous bedroom, wanting nothing more than for Jackson to swoop in and throw her onto the king-size bed. Instead, she searched the bureau for Daphne's lingerie. She pondered again the evidence of an uptight Daphne, whose drawers were in such order as to be almost laughable. Pulling out black lace panties, she held them up and nodded. They would do. Next, she went to the closet, where each garment was evenly spaced, just as it was at home. She took out a delicious red Armani suit and white camisole. Perfect. Now the stockings. She opened several drawers before finding them, and chose a pair of sheer and silky thigh highs in beige. She'd look like a million bucks tomorrow. Amber grabbed her items and reluctantly left the bedroom. Jackson looked up from his drink.
"All set?"
"Yes, thank you, Jackson. It's been a wonderful evening."
"Glad you enjoyed it. Good night," he said,
and gave a little nod as he headed toward his bedroom. The guest room was supplied to fulfill every possible need, just as Jackson had said. Amber stripped out of the day's clothes, showered, brushed her teeth, and got into bed. She relaxed into the soft feather mattress that seemed to hug her and pulled the down comforter up to her chin. It felt like she was resting on a cloud, but she was having a difficult time falling asleep, knowing that Jackson was lying in bed just a few rooms away. She hoped he would feel how much she lusted for him, and find his way into her bed, where he'd forget all about his perfect wife. After what seemed like an eternity, she realized it wasn't going to happen, and fell into a fitful sleep. The next morning, after she'd showered and dressed, she phoned Daphne to let her know she'd spent the night. She didn't want to give Daphne any reason to distrust her. Everything above board, as far as Daphne was concerned, anyway. And Daphne, in her usual sweet manner, assured Amber that it was perfectly fine. 27. Now that Amber had a front-row seat to the finances underpinning Daphne's world, she understood why Daphne always looked fantastic. Who wouldn't with that kind of money? From the top of her head to the bottom of her loofahed feet, people ministered to her on a daily basis. Amber got a taste of it when Daphne invited her to a small dinner party at the parish home. That's where Amber met Greg, the perfect antidote to her paltry wallet. They were seated next to each other at the dinner for 14. Greg was young, and although he was good-looking, Amber thought his chin weak and the reddish tint to his hair not to her liking. But the more she examined him, the more she saw that other women would probably find him very attractive. It was just next to Jackson that he didn't measure up. With so many individual conversations going on around the table, it was easy for Greg to monopolize her for almost the entire evening. Amber found the conversation banal, and Greg boring beyond belief. He talked on and on about his work at the family's hugely successful accounting firm.
"It's so fascinating to see how it all balances out, how perfectly it comes out in the end."
He was talking about the profit and loss statements, and Amber thought she'd rather have been having a root canal than listening to him talk about these stupid numbers.
"I'm sure it's incredible, but tell me, what do you do outside of work? You know, what kinds of hobbies do you have?"
Amber had asked, hoping he might get the message.
Hobbies. Well, let's see. I golf, of course, and I homebrew my own beer. I play bridge. Really enjoy that."
Was he for real?
Amber examined his face to see if he was putting her on, but no, he'd been perfectly serious.
"How about you?" Greg asked.
"I love art, so I visit museums whenever I can. I love to swim, and I've come to enjoy kayaking. I read a lot."
"I don't read much. I feel like, why read about someone else's life when you should be out living your own?"
Amber kept herself from spitting out her food in astonishment and simply nodded.
"That's an interesting take on books. Never heard that one before."
Greg smiled as if she'd handed him a blue ribbon or something. She'd decided he would be useful, if tough to endure. He'd serve her purposes for the time being. He'd be her temporary ticket to dinners out, plays, and posh events. She figured she could easily get him to buy her expensive presents. She'd keep him by her side and hope that Jackson would look at him as a rival. She'd already seen his watchful eye on them tonight at dinner. And she'd seen, too, that Daphne looked pleased at Amber's apparent attentiveness to Greg. But Amber wasn't interested in someone with a rich daddy. She wanted the rich daddy himself. In the meantime, she strung Greg along, letting him take her out to nice restaurants and buy her presents. He'd already sent her flowers to the office twice since the dinner, and she was delighted that Jackson looked none too pleased when he picked up the card and read it. She supposed Greg was nice enough and good-looking in his way, but he was such a dolt, boring as an old shoe. He was a good cover, though, and as she moved her plan into overdrive, he would serve her well in making sure Daphne didn't get suspicious or suddenly jealous of her. A month had gone by since she and Greg met at Daphne's dinner party,
and tonight they were all having dinner at the country club. She'd manipulated Daphne into it the other night on the phone. "I really want the four of us to get together," she said on the phone. "But I don't think Jackson wants to..."